Everybody, welcome to the Friday Filibuster. I am Dave Johnson, joined by Mac McIntyre.
Hack-a-do.
And briefly, Michael Staley.
Hello.
We're going to open the program. Mine is Eric, who will dial in later, but we usually put this at the end, a rear spoiler segment, but we'll put it right in the beginning, the front spoiler, even though that makes zero sense. There's no such thing as a front spoiler, but I don't know, maybe not. We plan on seeing Fast and Furious 6, so they might have that new technology available. So who am I to say where spoilers belong? Regardless, Star Trek Into Darkness, big release last week. We had talked about it. Mac, you had mentioned it was your most anticipated movie of the summer, and I know, Michael, you've seen it. And Mac, I saw it with Mac, so I figured we'll take some time to just do a little bit of spoilery digestion. So if you haven't seen it, feel free to skip ahead to whatever. I can't tell you when, but this is your final warning. So, Mac, you've had some time to kind of noodle with it. What are your thoughts on Star Trek Into Darkness?
It's a movie. I'm having a tough time getting my head wrapped around the movie. There's a lot that I enjoyed about it, but there's aspects of it that didn't work for me. So I'm really on the fence. I don't just flat out hate it like a lot of people on the internet. I mean, everybody's just shaking their fists at this movie. I didn't hate it. But it's definitely, I think, the mentality of the movie is they're trying to give the fans what they think the fans want. And they're also trying to take that and put clever little spins on it. So it's like they're presenting what they think the fans want, and yet they're also playing around with it and putting twists on it. So it's kind of pandering to the fans, but it's kind of not pandering to the fans. I don't know. It's tough. On the plus side, though, I think the cast still has that really great chemistry, remember, from the last movie, which I enjoyed. J.J. Abrams, he really knows how to direct some really great action scenes. So there's that as well. So there's positives as well.
All right. Michael, how about you?
I walked out of the theater liking it, but then the more I thought about it, the more frustrated I became. And this is without going on the internet and finding what everybody else was thinking.
Right.
It's just as it began to sink in, and Mac knows the first rule of creative writing is never pander to your audience, never write to your audience. You want to give them something that they don't expect.
You know, this information could have helped me in 2004 when I first started writing for DVD.
Well, see. Too late. Too little, too late.
Too little, too late.
I have a real problem with the timeline stuff. I have a real problem with the fact that there's no originality here. I mean, the opening sequence is original and fantastic, and if that was going to be set the tone for the rest of the picture, that's great, but that's not what happened. I think there's some great ideas. I think overall this was a huge missed opportunity. Like Max said, it's big, it's bold, it's fantastic, it's immersive. There is the spark. As I told Melissa, there's two things I have a big problem with. One is the McCoy character, which they completely screwed up. They're not using him.
Well, they sidelined him, really.
I know, and that's the whole purpose of the original trilogy. The whole core of that was the three of them together.
Right.
And that's not being done here. I think that's a huge wasted opportunity. And I think going after rewriting Wrath of Khan, which those moments happened for those characters much later in life, far later than where these characters are at. Personally, and I have a real problem with that because none of that stuff makes sense.
I guess I'm the third one to voice my Mac. We were talking when we first got out of the theater. It was a little mixed for us. We both agreed we had liked it, but ever since I think the post cinema sheen has worn off, I'll say the more I think about it, the more things sort of unravel for me. You know, and I agree. You know, actually, you know, the cast is. You know, the cast is likable. There's some humor there. J.J. Abrams knows what he's doing. But when you get to the story, like, it really does fall apart. And I'll get spoilery here, but who did not see it coming from a mile away that the Admiral was like trying to like provoke a war with the Klingons? You know,
I mean, right, or at least up to no good.
Up to no good. I mean, it's Peter Weller, right? I mean, so we knew that something was coming. And you know, so that was not surprising, nor was original. I would also like to ask, what was the point of, was it Ruth Marcus? Is that the character?
Carol Marcus.
Thank you, Carol Marcus. What was the point of her character? And period. What did she do? What did she bring? You know, I kept thinking, is she going to maybe be in cahoots with Khan? That could be an interesting twist. Or was that merely a name drop? Because as far as I can tell, her main role was to strip down into her underwear, you know, and stand in front of. I don't know. I mean, what did she do that couldn't be? You know, she was.
It's because that same character, Alder, was in Wrath of Khan. It's someone we're already familiar with.
So it's a name drop, pretty much, right?
Right. It's fan pandering. It's like, you know, well, the fans want, you know, Khan, the fans want classic Star Trek, so here's a character from classic Star Trek that we're going to put in the movie.
And I think I leaned over and asked you, like, if this person, you know, was in Wrath of Khan. Like, I'm the viewer who is familiar with the mythology for sure, has only seen Wrath of Khan once, though, so isn't super steeped into it. So I didn't recognize the Marcus character. You know, I recognized the name Khan, obviously, but, right. You know, so I was kind of – so coming at it from that perspective of just, like, Joe moviegoer – I just said, what is her point? I always felt like there has to be something more to her. Like she goes on board and then, oh, she and Khan had this love affair this whole time or something. I don't know, but it was.
She did unlock the mystery torpedo.
Again, so why couldn't Robbie the Nintendo robot do that? You know, it could have been anybody. And like, just like it could have been anybody, like, it didn't have to be Khan. It could have been Jimmy the bad guy, right? Because, you know, what exactly did he bring that was so Khan-like? All I know is they had a throwaway line about the eugenics war, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was it. And his whole plot, I guess, was just reuniting with his popsicle friends. It was the, you know, the Demolition Man. It was Demolition Man plot, you know, of course. But, you know, he gets mad. He attacks the Enterprise. But I just didn't feel like there's any menace to Khan's plot, you know. I thought the magic Khan blood was kind of a cop-out, which kind of goes to my issue with the Kirk-Spock switcheroo with the death scene, right? Was there any stakes to that death? Did anybody really think Kirk was going to die and stay dead?
Absolutely not.
Look, I mean, in Wrath of Khan, when Spock bites it, you don't know there's a third movie coming out. You don't know what's going to happen, right? I mean, there's some gravitas there, right? Here, is anybody thinking at all that you're never going to see Chris Pine again?
But it's, you know, but that's the problem I have with the movie is that this is something that the fans are familiar with. This is what they remember. So let's give this to the fans because this, you know, that's the mindset behind the movie is just we're giving you what you want, you know.
Right.
But I don't think that works.
I think it was Alex, Rob, and Damon sitting in a room, fanboy masturbating and saying, wouldn't this be cool? Let's do this, and then let's do this, and then let's do this. And I wish somebody had been there to bitch slap them and say, you know what, guys? This isn't going to work. This is really stupid. Why not take an opportunity? You have this whole world to explore with these characters. You've set up an alternate timeline. Go off and find something new. Give us something exciting. Give us something we haven't seen before.
Or at the very least, if you want to do Khan, fine. Give him something interesting to do. Like, he starts off as this malevolent force, then he becomes semi-sympathetic because he's being used by the old white man cabal, right? And then he just kind of he crashes his plane, you know, takes out about a million San Franciscoites, apparently, you know, which they obviously rebuild that within a year or so.
All right, which was a whole obvious statement about 9/11.
If it's that clunky, then like, I'm hoping it isn't. Let me just say that. I'm hoping no one comes out and says that, because if it's that clunky, that'd just be so rough.
Well, and did anybody else vomit in their mouth the minute that Leonard Nimoy showed up?
Yeah, what was the – okay, so what was the point there?
Absolutely nothing.
Like, what did he – like, I don't know, just what could he have said that helped?
That was the ultimate fan, hey, guys, look what we did. Look who we got back.
Yeah.
Right.
Or patching into the future and getting a hold of William Shatner, you know, have him show up. That could be the only other thing that would outdo that, I think.
Because there's nothing that Spock could share that would have helped them.
That's true. Right, that's true. And my favorite – I mean, this is straight up Trek. I know this is what happens. I mean, when the captains are going on death-defying away missions, that is what it is. But I just love how they had to get Khan's blood, even though there was frozen super blood everywhere.
72 other, yeah.
they had to get Khan's blood.
Yeah, and that could have been easily explained with just one sentence.
Like,
it'd take too long for them to thaw out or something.
Or like only Khan has, Khan's blood only would work. But, they're fighting, so who do they send down when all the, when the stakes are this high to subdue Khan, the 80-pound communications officer? it's like, okay, that's Trek, I understand that, but whatever. I mean, that seemed kind of pandery a little bit too. So I don't know. I mean, I guess just the plot didn't grab me. And if you looked at the trailers, look at the trailers now, and it's interesting to see how they took some lines out of context and how they cut the trailer together.
Oh, of course.
Right? Because, when the Vengeance shows up, the way the trailer is cut, it looks like Khan's piloting that, right? And,
you're
going to have a starship. And there's another shot with Khan says, "Shall we begin?" You remember this? He says, "Shall we begin?"
And there was a teaser poster that had the same thing on there.
So there you go. So that in the trailer makes you think, oh, he's got this complex diabolical scheme, maybe.
Not
cat and mouse. No. What he's saying is, "Shall we begin my cargo transfer?" That's what he's talking. He's just saying, "Shall we begin you shipping these cargo over here?" I mean, so it's like even the trailers seem to be kind of dishonest.
The whole thing was just a mess. I mean, the only reason he was hiding on Kronos is so that we could see what a Klingon looks like in this world.
Yeah.
It could have been any other planet.
And again, if they have the capability to warp from San Francisco to the Klingon homeworld.
Right.
I read this somewhere, so I can't take credit for this. But what is the point of a starship then?
Yeah.
Right? I don't know.
Yep.
A lot of people online are complaining about the transporters and how they're used really inconsistently in the movie.
Yeah.
I've read way too much about transporters in the last couple of days.
And one of the hero moments for Chekhov in the first movie was that he could teleport somebody who was moving. And in this movie, he says, "Well, I can't get a lock on them because they're moving." And I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So it was a huge wasted opportunity. And I hope JJ says, you know what? I am going to just focus on Star Wars now. Somebody else can come in and take over this franchise if they want, because I am done.
Yeah, I mean, I don't
see how you could work on both.
No.
Right. So, I don't know. I guess I'm just more disappointed.
It is. It's a huge disappointment, especially
because I love the 2009 one so much.
Yeah.
When the 2009 one was first announced and before it came out, I was really concerned that they were going to take Star Trek and just turn it into a nostalgia item.
Yeah.
And which they didn't do in 2009. I thought they really got to the heart of who these characters were. But this movie, I think that's the intent.
With the Tribble.
Is nostalgia.
Yeah, right.
There was Tribble. There was a reference to the Mud incident with Harry Mud.
That was kind of funny, actually.
Yeah.
And
at
the very least, I mean, Mac and I hung around to the end of credits. I was thinking, ooh, post-credit stinger. Could be Kirk or McCoy hanging out with all these Tribbles all over the place. Kind of funny. Nope.
I would have liked that, actually.
Right? Not bad. At least, look, if you're going to go pander, go full pander and have some fun with that. Nope.
Simon Pegg, I think, was the best thing in this movie. Because I just...
Yeah, okay, here's another...
It was on screen.
You bring him up. Here's another thing that kind of got my goat. When the whole...
Yeah.
So when he's in the airlock, right? And he's opening it up. It's such transparent hackery to have him, like... He's looking at the guy with a gun pointed at him, right? Before he pulls the lever and blasts him out into space. But he can't... Scotty can't blast a Starfleet guy out into space. No. It's got to be private security. And that line is so hacky. It says, "You look like private security," right? So, and then all of a sudden, the Klingons and the Borg have been replaced by private security as a greatest threat to interstellar peace. And it's just such a lame cop-out. You know what I mean? It's like, Scotty's still murdering this poor bastard, and it makes a difference if it's private security. I don't know. It's just, that's the kind of hacky stuff, right? Rogue Admiral with the private security guys picking a fight with the Klingons, and I don't know.
All right, so if this was the big movie that stumbled, are we then hanging our hats for the box office on Man of Steel?
I am unhealthily, infatuated with Man of Steel right now. I am all in, so I can be... My spirit can be crushed, but I am ready. I don't know if you saw the latest trailer.
I did. Oof. With the very heavy Zod.
That is Zodorific, yeah. it's amazing. Tracking the when you chart those trailers, the evolution of those trailers, it's pretty interesting. They've been kind of small, you know, just like small Clark finding his way, and then it seems like all hell breaks
loose. Fisherman.
Clark the lobsterman to all hell breaking loose. So yeah, I'm ready.
I have no faith in Zack Snyder, I have no interest. I mean, no vested interest in this movie whatsoever. It turns out to be great. That's fine, but otherwise, I'm just like whatever.
I am in. So we'll see. So how about you, Mac?
I'm cautious. You're cautious. I'll go see it, of course, but I'm nervous.
No, I'm expecting awesome things. So I can be really utterly disappointed. But word of mouth has been pretty good, though, right? I've heard like. Word of mouth has been decent, so we'll see. So, yeah. All right. Well, that's a shame, huh? That's a bummer. So.
Yep.
All right. Well, I guess we can let you go, Michael.
Yep, I'm going to go upload reviews and all that wonderful stuff.
Fantastic. So. Yeah, thank you for joining us.
Of course.
Much
appreciated. Definitely.
Yep. All right. Talk to you guys later.
See ya.
Bye.
So, Mac, would you say that since we stopped, you know, since we left the theater, you've kind of soured on it a little more?
A little more, yeah. I mean, I made the mistake of reading the reviews, and there's just like so much just anger and just hate for this movie.
See, I'm not
people
in
are just
that.
Outraged.
Yeah, I'm not in that. I'm just kind of befuddled.
I didn't have that reaction. You know, I thought it was fun.
I'm with you. I just kind of left, just like, yeah. It's not. It didn't measure up to the high standards of the first film. And Eric is here with us, and we, you know, that's kind of the Eric. You're hearing the tail end of our Star Trek digestion. So I will say between Michael, Mac, and me, we weren't overly enamored. So whatever that means.
Yeah, I wanted to see it opening weekend. Unfortunately, that was sort of limited to whether it was going to play at my local theater, which I hoped it would because it was a big movie. But since it's only a two-screen theater, it's always kind of up in the air. And so I feel now like I still want to see it because I want to, you know, read reviews and be part of the conversation, but I've gotten such a kind of a sour taste in my mouth just from what little I've gleaned that I'm not sure. I probably will still see it this weekend, but
yeah.
I think
that was the point
like
I was just making is that people are just so outraged and so furious at the movie. But my advice is see it and make up your own mind.
Yeah, which is always good advice. It's just sort of like, do I want to, like, you know, drive an extended distance away from my house, pay more money to see something that may not be, you know. I guess the answer is yes, because I'm a person who watches movies and talks about them, so I guess I kind of have to, but I wish I felt like I wanted to.
I know. I will say, though, that you will get your money's worth as far as spectacle. I promise that. Like,
I'm
money's on the screen, and at the very least, it'll be a satisfying popcorn experience. I'll just put it that way. And I know that's a backhanded compliment, but
no. And I'm probably in a pretty good position because I have such low expectations that who knows? Maybe I'll have them exceeded. So
there you go. All right. And Benedict Cumberbatch is awesome in this.
That's good.
He is pretty good. So I don't know. Movie star turn, Mac. You think you'll be in more stuff?
Could be.
Yeah. I think he's got the chops. So, all right. So, I guess we'll just segue to you, Eric. You can fill us in what you've been up to.
Okay. Well, speaking of low expectations, I last week leading up to the big Office series finale, I decided to just marathon through all the episodes this season I didn't watch, which was most of the episodes. And I think it was actually okay. It was actually pretty enjoyable to do that. I have to. It's interesting because I think when we were so down on The Office, you know, rightfully so, it wasn't a great season. But when we were down on it, it was still kind of early for a lot of other series, NBC series. And so I think that the last season of The Office is about on par with everything else that NBC put out on Thursday nights this past season, which is not a wonderful compliment, but at the same time, it's not like the just disastrous embarrassment that I think at one point we thought it was. I didn't laugh a whole lot, but the characters are still. I had enough residual goodwill from the good seasons that I enjoyed watching it, and I have to say that the finale was total fan service. It was overly sentimental, but I really kind of loved it because it was one of those things where I will never watch it again. But it was kind of nice just to see everyone, almost everyone, kind of land in a good place. And there are lots of, good feelings and people showing up and, it was a perfectly fine season series finale. Didn't push the envelope, but it didn't really have to. So.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I agree with that. I think it's, do I rank it as in, you know, my favorite finales? No, because it didn't do anything earth-shattering, but there's a few laughs in there in the fan service, and it was, you know, it was sweet. It was sweet nature in the fan service.
Yeah, and I am kind of a romantic at heart, and I do like sweetness. I have to say that I like things to be edgy sometimes, but I also like to kind of get fuzzy feelings too. So I think it delivered on that account. So, compared to a lot of other, even just season finales that I've seen this year, it was, you know, certainly on the upper half of those, because there were some not great ones too. So,
quick lightning ambush topic. I know we've done this as a full one, but your personal favorite series finales. Go, Mac.
First one off the top of my head, Twin Peaks. Just for how crazy and off the wall it was.
All right. Eric?
I'm going to go with Quantum Leap.
That one is depressing, though, right?
Yeah, it's sort of...
I remember the last title card. You know, Sam never made it home, right? I don't think he ever made it home.
Still, I don't know. It might have been just because it was not what I expected. But it also sort of fit what I haven't seen that in like for, I probably saw it when it was on and that was it. But you know, I was like 10, but at the same time, like, you know, it's still stuck with me. And I will also all these years later, I've not gone back and rewatched the series, at all. And I may never do so, but I still like the Lost series finale. I had no problems, serious problems with the end of that show, probably because I've not gone back and looked at it too critically, but. Again,
I would just let that lie.
That's fine. But, I think it struck a similar chord to the Office series finale, in that it kind of had the right warm fuzziness at the right moment for me.
I will say Quantum Leap had one of my all time favorite season finales. I'm pretty sure it was a season finale. I think it was the one where, like, Sam encounters the devil, right?
I don't remember that one.
I don't know if that was a season finale. Remember that special episode. Yeah, that was a trip.
Oh, you're right. It was a Halloween special. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm mixing up with the season finale that ends with him switching places with what's his face, Dean
Stockwell.
They do switch places. I remember that was that's pretty cool. So I have to double check on that.
Yeah. What about you, Dave? I don't think you
Angel.
Okay.
Oh yes.
Since we talked Man of Steel real quick, I thought Smallville had a really nice wrap up too. Mac, I remember you got a kick out of it too, so.
Yeah, they really pulled out all the stuff.
They did a good job of Smallville and they hit all the right notes. But yeah, for me, Angel takes the top honor, just, like perfectly encapsulated the theme of the show, had a lot of moving moments in it, you know, a lot of great badass moments in it, and then it kind of left on a cliffhanger, but it was the way it should have ended, so, that still remains my all time favorite.
And we have yet to actually see the Arrested Development series finale.
That's true.
Apparently.
Sunday,
so,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, there was 15 series finales altogether.
That's right.
Pick your favorite.
All right. So let's move on to stuff I guess we got coming up. Anything we reviewed. Mac, what do you have? Anything interesting?
I believe it's on the site now. I finished up my review of Beautiful Creatures.
Yeah. Full feature movie or CW show? You decide.
looks like one, but is the other. It's kind of does the supernatural teen romance thing and combines it with the Southern Gothic thing. And I don't know, it's okay, I guess. The problem with the movie is that it's almost all exposition. Because this is based on a series of books, and they're no doubt hoping for a whole series of franchise movies. So this is just setting everything up. So we meet this girl and her crazy family, and then there's magic stuff going on. So we have to stop every couple of minutes and explain how all the magic stuff works. Then we have to stop and explain her relationships to all the different family members. And then there are two other characters who have a history, and we have to stop the momentum of the stories to explain their backgrounds. And it's just as every time you think the story's going to get going, it stops so we can get more exposition, and that was really frustrating. The whole movie felt like just set up for future movies.
Oh, did it do any business at all?
I don't know. I don't think so, but I don't know. I didn't check the box office.
All right.
But I know that, I mean, the books have been bestsellers, so it might have.
I need to really read some more teen fiction. I'm out of the loop.
Out of the loop.
It's a vast ocean.
It is. I will. Okay, here's a bonus. Okay, bonus Amber's topic lightning round. What young adult fiction did you read growing up? Young adult fiction now, not, you know, the halfway point between Stephen King and Laura Ingalls Wilder.
What didn't I read would be the short answer.
It's got to be, but it's got to be the young adult fiction. It's, you know, specifically.
Well, what, I mean, young adult fiction, I feel like, was different when we were younger.
You think so? Okay, I'll tell you.
Well, I mean, were there as many, like, just, it has to be a series of 10 books, and it has to be.
I will say that I devoured the Hardy Boys Case Files.
Sure.
Those were awesome. Like, they were, I mean, it was like the first book in that series, Frank and Joe Hardy. Frank and Joe Hardy battle an assassin and drop him off a mall third floor to his death. These are the same guys that roll around the chat investigating treasure chests. So it's, I was struck by how hardcore it was. So it was right up my alley. So yeah, Hardy Boy Case Files.
And there was a whole sort of, class of, I mean, I guess they're technically young adult because they weren't aimed at kids, but, you know, books that even the teacher would read to us in like fifth or sixth grade where someone would always die. There was this whole, you know, obviously Bridge to Terabithia is probably the most famous one, but like the A Taste of Blackberries, I remember that was like a crazy one where like the kid, spoiler alert for A Taste of Blackberries, where the kid is allergic to bee stings and gets stung by a bee at the end and dies.
Nice.
Which I think was later reused in My Girl, but
yeah, good call.
But it was like this whole like we're gonna toughen you up. You know, all the were Beverly Cleary books kind of pitched at a slightly older crowd?
Yeah, maybe. I think that would work. I think
There's one book I don't remember
stuff more so than the stuff.
Yeah, I don't remember the name of this book. There was one book that was about, there was a kid who loved to draw. And I forget what was happening. Maybe his parents were getting a divorce. There was something he didn't, you know, want to have happen. So he basically locked himself in the attic with his drawing pad, and he just stayed up there. And that was his like protest or something. And he just stayed up there for days and days and weeks. And it was this whole kind of process. You know, I mean, a story where you know a child is putting himself in peril while some horrible thing is happening outside, you know, and around him, which I think is a more young adult subject matter, frankly, than werewolves and vampires.
Nice. I will say that first Hardy Boys book is called Dead on Target.
That's pretty
and
nice.
It opens with Joe Hardy's girlfriend getting blown up in her car.
Was that the series? I remember reading like old school Hardy Boys books, and I remember reading some new series. Maybe this is part of the same one. The one thing I remember is them being like captured by, I don't know, let's say terrorists, although maybe in the jungle, and they were gonna feed them peaches out of a can.
Ooh, man,
there was some like paint on the lid. And they're like, no, we don't want to get lead poisoning.
Oh, wow. That sounds like them, but I don't know. I mean, it's possible. I'm reading through these Amazon ones, and I'm bringing back memories, not of the specific plots, but of the covers. Oh. I remember his little trivia question. I remember we used to go, when the new books came out, to the paper cutter store in North Utica. And I would pony up my $2.99 for
money hat.
That's right. For books like Cult of Crime and Death Game. Excellent.
Now, Dave, would you consider Encyclopedia Brown to be young adult fiction?
Encyclopedia Brown is for everybody.
It really is, isn't it?
Because I don't care how smart you think you are. You are not figuring out those mysteries.
Because they did not tell you the piece of information.
They leave out vital. Yeah, seeing that the solutions are nothing but non sequiturs.
I love those. Oh, sorry, Will. We could talk about our favorite Encyclopedia Brown kids.
I could talk. Yeah.
Love it. Yeah. So much.
Okay, I don't know, Mac. Right. Okay, you said, what didn't I read? And you said, okay, let's continue on. Sorry, Mac. Go ahead.
That's all right.
Are you all wrapped up with animals?
Yeah, Beautiful Creatures. It was okay, but it was frustrating.
All right. Eric, you got anything of interest?
Nothing this week. I'm on taking a break.
Sabbatical. Got it. Well, I have nothing of really interest to share either, except the low-budget Canadian movie called Battle Earth. Which wants to be like Battlefield Earth, but it's not. It's a lie. The cover is a lie. 85 minutes of like three guys in Canadian soldier uniforms walking through the wilderness. So
ouch.
Yes, it was ouch. Okay, well, Mac, what do we have? We have cover galleries to look at.
Yes, let's take a look at what's coming out next week on DVD and Blu-ray. We're going to go to DVDverdict.com, click on the upcoming DVD releases tab. From there, we'll hit the link for the cover art gallery for May 28th. And you at home can play along.
Oh, what's this, Apocalypse Earth?
Yes,
Apocalypse Earth.
With almost the same font as Battle Earth.
Yeah, almost the same. You're not
incorrect. Maybe it's a sequel.
First is the battle, then there's the apocalypse. Or maybe the other way around, I'm not sure. Then there's the rise. The Beetlejuice animated series, both season one and the entire series. I remember watching that. I think
I remember laughing at that show pretty heartily, but who knows?
Yeah, I definitely watched it. And, even the I reviewed the movie Beetlejuice on DVD years back, and one of the bonus features was a couple episodes from that show, and I remember being pretty good.
Yeah, I remember laughing at it. So. Yeah. My man George Gently returns for series five. I'm not sure if that. My review has posted already, but I reviewed that.
Now, I saw the name of this movie actually on our product list, Dorfman in Love.
Yeah.
And I thought it was going to be one of those Tim Conway.
Yes.
He's like the short guy.
That's right.
Like, oh, man,
okay, quick question. Is Tim Conway alive?
No.
Do you know?
Boy, I want to say no, so I'm going to say yes.
You're going to say yes? Mac, is Tim Conway alive? Don't
I
click
think so.
Okay. I will search now, Tim Conway. Okay, let's see here, see if you're correct. He looks like he is still alive, yes.
All right, ding, ding, ding.
So, well done.
He was in that movie, The Aristocrats.
Oh, yeah.
He's an older gentleman now, for sure. 1933 is when he... Sure. 80 years old. All right, enough Tim Conway talk. A lot of Superman stuff coming out, huh?
Yeah, it looks like they've repackaged some episodes of the 90s animated series. So hoping to cash in on some of that sweet Man of Steel cash.
Yep, that's right. Here's this was actually on our request list. I took a swing at requesting it. I have no idea what to expect, but Longmire, the season Longmire, I think it's, is it A&E? I think it's A&E.
I was wondering what that was.
Yeah, I saw it. I think it's A&E because I saw trailers for it. Accompanying whatever show we were watching on A&E. I don't know why I'm blanking on it, but it looked like a really good cast. Katie Sackhoff's in this, kind of like a modern Western, it seemed. Mm. I don't know. It looked interesting. The reviews seemed to be okay. I'd never heard of it, but so I don't know. I'm not sure if it ends up on my porch or not, but I am compelled by it, so we'll see.
We got Doctor Who. This is part two of the seventh season of the new series. It gets confusing. But this is the 11th Doctor, and they're introducing his new companion, so there's a lot of excitement and mystery about that.
Mm. Now, is the snowman or whatever, is that the Christmas special?
I believe so, yes.
Holiday special, I don't want to offend anybody.
All right, going once, going twice. Okay, inadvertently sleazy sounding DVDs of the week, Mac.
I'll go back to Longmire.
Okay.
Good.
Eric.
Blowing Wild.
That's good. That's good.
On the nose, perhaps.
I don't know if this is an erotic movie, but I'm going to say Fluid Technique.
You know, I was thinking of putting that one.
It looks like it's
no, I shouldn't go there.
Yeah, it's a fitness DVD, so I'll just call that. So. Okay. Let's go to our ambush topics proper. You know how this works. Eric, why don't you kick us off?
All right. Unusual Voices.
Well, first one that popped immediately to mind was the minister from The Princess Bride.
The impressive clergyman.
Yes. Is that his name?
Right. Yeah, in the credits. That's how he's called.
That's probably the second most irritating aped voice behind like a Monty Python fake English accent, you know someone absolutely trying to do that voice, but yeah.
Like the Knights Who Say Knee, and then you got
that's right,
the guy right there.
Clergyman. That is it.
That's right. Well, since I mentioned Twin Peaks earlier, now I've got it on the mind. So the dream sequences from Twin Peaks have that weird backwards-forwards effect.
Where everybody's voices are all... I gotta watch the show at least once before.
Everybody's voices are all distorted. How they did it was that the actors actually spoke their lines backwards, phonetically. And then that footage was played backwards so that their dialogue was being pronounced forwards, but it sounded all weird. And the effect is very disorienting and bizarre and hard to understand. What's interesting about that is that the actor, Michael J. Anderson, I believe his name is, when they approached him to do the part, turns out he had actually done this before somewhere else, which I find very hard to believe. But so he actually knew how to say all his lines backwards.
Well, mine is not quite as weird. It was an unusual choice when people first heard it. I just watched Lincoln for the first time, and Daniel Day-Lewis's vocal choice for Lincoln was struck a lot of people as weird when it was first in the trailer. Although I think it works really well in the movie, which is not a movie you can really zone out while you're watching.
No,
you gotta pay attention.
You gotta focus.
You gotta focus. I mean, it's clear. Like the stakes are clear. Like you know what they want to do. I mean, there's kind of some big ideas, but it's a large sprawling cast with a ton of people in it. Walt Goggins is a small part. Lee Pace and a ton of people. So
is Walt Goggins in Django Unchained too?
Yeah, he is. He's good in that.
Okay, I will go next. Favorite small roles of actors before they became big stars, or just odd? Yeah, how about odd small roles of actors before they got big stars? Not necessarily favorite.
All right. Well, this is okay. I'm going to cheat a little bit because. Yes. Why not? I was just thinking about this, that now Aziz Ansari, Rob Hubel, and Paul Scheer become pretty big names in comedy, well known. But you know, when they were in Human Giant, like I had never heard of them before. When I reviewed that that season, and I was so impressed by them, I was really excited to see them in real stuff like Parks and Rec and all these other shows. So part of it's me saying,
I like Human Giant. When,
Human Giant's awesome, but yeah, it's like.
This is a tricky one. I guess now also Star Trek is on my mind. Did you guys know that Kirsten Dunst was on The Next Generation on an episode?
They did not know that.
She was just a little girl. She was a little kid. And they made her up so she was a funky looking alien and she could read people's minds.
Okay, that's not bad. It's a good one.
I'm gonna add to mine because mine was cheating. in Batman Begins, when I watched it again, last year, after I'd seen Game of Thrones, I was shocked to see that the little kid that Batman like talks to and saves at one point, it was Joffrey.
Freaking Joffrey.
It's amazing. It was like,
it's that little douchebag. Absolutely.
I never brought it up on the show before, but it's like, that's Joffrey.
It's a great one. That's that little...
Be nice to him.
Little douchebag. just with a Hangover Part 3 coming up, Bradley Cooper had a role in Wet Hot American Summer as Michael Ian Black's gay lover. So I thought that was kind of funny. So so there you go. Unless we talk about Wet Hot American Summer, which I feel like we haven't really talked about as much as other movies over and over again. But that is a movie that remains to make me laugh pretty heartily these days.
I think we can say we endorse it wholeheartedly.
We endorse Wet Hot American Summer wholeheartedly.
You haven't seen it, watch it. Now that it is... At least a hot summer. It's almost summer.
It's almost summer, yeah.
Get ready for summer by watching.
That's right. So. Mac, you ever see that? Why Not American Summer?
I did. I finally got around to seeing it a while back.
Yeah, and? Did it do anything for you?
Well, you guys really hyped it up for me, so I was expecting just unbelievableness. The first half hour or so is pretty slow going before it starts getting really crazy. But once the ball gets rolling, it was very funny.
All right.
I'd say it took a couple of viewings for me to really get into it. I think maybe I was expecting too much the first time I watched it as well, since it was like, it was the States movie. So.
Right.
Yeah, it's great.
I was confused. It confused me. Like it seemed to play it sort of straight until they went to the town and got stoned.
Yes, exactly.
And then things just got surreal all of a sudden. So, like, good for them for pulling the rug out from under my feet, because it just went, hey, straight out of comedy, you know, a little quirky. And they're gone for an hour, and all that happens. They become crack addicts in an hour or so. Then I knew, I was like, now it is the state.
Yes.
Okay, Mac, wrap us up.
Okay, from like action movies and tough guy movies, have a tough guy dialogue that actually sounds ridiculous.
Are we just supposed to agree with that? Because that's
I don't know. That's tough guy dialogue that sounds ridiculous, huh? Man, you know, I'm gonna have to ask you to go first, Mac, to get us a sense of what you're thinking here.
Okay, with Fast and Furious 6 coming out, I just got a Fast 5 on Netflix, and I've been watching it. And there's this scene when The Rock makes his big debut. You know, he comes storming into the movie, and he's so tough. He's talking to tough. He's barking orders at all the other cops. And right in the middle of his big tough guy speech, he says, "Make sure you got your thunderwear on."
Your thunderwear on.
Good.
It's pretty bad.
And I was just like, what did he just say?
Okay.
I don't remember a lot of these quotes.
I'm having trouble. Like, I based my entire life around, you know, watching action movies, and I'm striking out here. Let's see.
There's lots of action movies with quips.
So. That's true. A lot of quips.
And did the quip not work?
I know. A lot of intentional quips, obviously. You know. Commando is full of them, of course. Okay. I don't know. This is all I got. And this is not, I don't even know if this works, Mac. But speaking of Demolition Man, I don't know, when Sylvester Stallone gets pulled out of the car when they got filled with all that airbag fluff. Remember that scene?
Yeah.
And he says, "I feel like I'm a cannoli." I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, I know it was a quip, but didn't seem to work with his character. But I don't know. I keep thinking maybe something else will occur.
He is the Demolition Man, and he loves his cannolis.
Did I ever hit on Blu-ray? Is Demolition Man on Blu-ray?
I don't know. Good question. I think so.
Oh, man. I need to own that then. All right, Eric. You're on the hook.
Yeah, I will admit to looking at quotes on IMDb at the moment. Trying to find myself.
I thought this would be an easy one.
You'd think so, but yeah. I'm not good at
that. I don't
have the context. I barely remember watching the movie. But in The Expendables, apparently, Payne, I don't know who that is, says to Barney Ross, "How many men you got?" Barney Ross replies, "Just your mother." So that's what I got.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good meathead talk.
Now I'm looking at Total Recall, because I've seen some recall. Some sort of like famous one from that, but I can't remember it.
What was it? It wasn't dialogue, but what was the taxi driver who screwed him over? It was in the giant drill. Maybe it was in the taxi. Yeah, Benny? Is it Benny?
Yeah, Benny, yeah.
Just see, like, when Schwarzenegger was attacking him with a drill, just started, kept screaming Benny. That just seemed weird to me. Benny! Drill. So, I don't know. A Demolition Man is on Blu-ray. Yeah, $10 on Amazon, so.
Nice.
Well, I'll keep my eyes peeled for sales on that, for sure. But I think that wraps it up here. I feel like my action movie fan card should be revoked. Thanks a lot for the emasculation, Mac. We got something?
But we can expect paychecks from IMDb and paper cutters.
I've folks with paper cutters. Unfortunately, paper cutter went the way of the farmhouse, I believe.
Oh, that's sad.
So, shocking. But,
a small bookstore no one's heard of.
Well, it was a paper supply store. It was like a It's like a proto Staples.
Oh, okay, that actually makes a lot more sense.
But I had books. It did have some books.
I thought paper cutter was an edgy name for a bookstore.
There were books available there. Yeah,
I don't know. If you had like an edgy bar, but it was for people who read a lot, it could be called Paper Cuts.
Nice.
That'd be pretty good, right?
Pretty good.
Yeah.
It looks like looks like paper cutter's gone. Can't even find a Wikipedia entry for it.
Well, can you find a Wikipedia? Is there a Wikipedia entry for say Oskanitz or something like that?
If there isn't, it should be.
It should get cracking on that, right now.
We should get crackalacking on that for sure. So, I believe. Let's see, the page Oskanitz does not exist, but you can for it to be created. Pretty good.
That's sad.
There is a listing for tomato pie, though.
Oh yeah, there it is.
Yeah,
tomato pie.
As evidenced by period photographs of Oskanitz Pizza in East Utica, New York, tomato pie was sold as early as 1914.
Dave, is that suggesting that Oscar Nietzsche does not actually exist? And that perhaps you visited it in like an alternate, like a shining light history?
You think like an alternate Star Trek timeline?
Yeah, it was the other timeline.
Yeah, like if you go to Oscar Nietzsche, there'll be like a photograph on the wall of a bunch of people.
And we're in that
there. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like The Shining, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Things are getting weird. So, okay, on that, that huge revelation. I guess we'll wrap this up. So thank you for listening. Mac, take us away.
Enhance your calm, John Spartan.